Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 45 of the Self-Help Podcast. And it's not just me and Sean today, we've got a special guest, Conrad Rafiq. We're going to be talking about healthy body and healthy mind today. Conrad is a personal trainer, fitness guru. Before that, I want to quickly mention some of our wonderful reviewers who are on iTunes. They've left us some kind reviews. First up, thanks to Mooncup. I love this podcast and really enjoy the presenting style. I've taken some good info from the series and look forward to future episodes. Very nice. That's nice, isn't it, Sean?
It's very good.
And second, we've had two this week.
Mooncup, cool. I like that.
Yeah. Second one, Alone Music, another UK one. I feel like I found these at just the right time, and these podcasts have really put a light at the end of the tunnel after recently separating from my wife and being signed off from work from depression. Okay, thanks very much, guys. James. Well, thanks, James.
Yeah, sounds good, doesn't it?
But yeah, thanks for your time there, guys. Quickly as well, I mentioned one last week on Twitter. Someone called Airing It Out had said a kind word on there. And I forgot to mention that I know we asked for people like to tell us where they listen to this podcast. This person listens to it while they're swimming in the morning.
So, when you said that to me, I went and checked out headphones, and I didn't realise that you can get waterproof headphones.
Yeah?
And, yeah, Wi-Fi headphones, all kinds of stuff. So I should get some of those.
Pretty cool. They heard the review last week and they were on the first lap. I'm not sure what lap you're up to airing out at the moment, but thanks.
Yeah. Enjoy your swim, yeah.
Fantastic. We've got a special guest this week, our friend Conrad, who you've probably heard us mention him hundreds of times because he's the guy that's helping Sean with his running.
He's a guru.
He's an EIF master trainer. His website, which I know reasonably well, because I kind of helped him build it, says he's an accelerated health and fitness fat loss coach, and he helps people scale their own personal mountains. That's very nice. I like that. How are you doing, Conrad?
I'm okay? Very well, thank you. Yes, pleasure to be here.
Good to have you on
I'm
board.
Sean.
Yeah. Not too nervous, I hope, or anything?
No.
No. You just look pretty calm.
Just relax.
How's everyone's week been? Have we been okay? Sean, how you doing?
Well, I'm a hero today because I've run 14k this morning, which is my record. Which
keeps going up each week.
Yeah, yeah, and that's non-stop, see. So I used to do the walk-run bits, but now, so when I come back, I'm feeling pretty clever. The one thing that amazed me, I went to have some new shoes fitted because I was getting black toe syndrome, and I've got up a shoe size, a complete shoe size, so my feet have actually spread out by doing the running. Which was something I didn't expect to happen at all. But there you go.
Huh? Blimey.
So, I should probably be able to swim better now that I've got bigger.
14k, so next week it'll be 15. How far are you going to go?
I was planning on getting up to doing 20k Monday, Wednesday, Friday. That was my aim. And I don't know whether that's possible. Do you think, is that possible, Conrad?
It's a very good question. I mean, because your distance can just keep going up and up and up. But eventually, two things will happen. You'll either get bored or you will get some sort of overuse injury.
Yeah, your legs drop off. Yeah.
Blisters on the feet, things like that. Things like that can happen. So it is better to try and mix your training up and have some long runs. So it might be one, it might be two long runs a week.
Yeah.
And then some sort of shorter run, recovery run, or do a speed session.
Yeah.
Or a hill session to try and develop speed and power in the legs.
I've got this mad thing locked in my head where I've got to get to 20k. And then I can start playing with it.
That's your personal mountain.
Yeah, that's my mountain.
Yeah. Some good advice coming already. What's the life in a week in the life of a personal trainer then, Conrad? Is it fair to call you a personal trainer, actually?
It is to an extent, but I try and not badge myself that, so I call myself a fitness and motivation coach.
Yeah.
Because I do a lot more than just pure training. Personal training to me doesn't have the big nutrition component and the even bigger motivation and behaviour change component in there. So those are real big parts of the equation for anyone who wants to get fit and lose weight. You know,
I think that the thing from stuff that you and I have done and clients in common and stuff like that is the idea that people have so many emotional issues, self-esteem issues that are based around the need, and that's the motivational bit, isn't it? It's working all different areas of the person.
That's what we're talking about today.
Yeah,
I mean, people can go to rockmountain.co.uk to find out what you're up to, Conrad. How's your week? How does your week pan out? Usually working with one-to-one, I know it does, and you do group classes as well.
I do group classes. I do group exercise classes that I run myself. I still teach some classes at Thornton Hall Hotel on the Sonia Wirral.
Yeah.
And I do one-to-ones and one-to-twos. Small group training is quite nice, like that, one-to-twos. This week, so I've taught spinning classes. I helped a client complete a 10k off-road run in Loggerheads in North Wales. And I had two kickstart weight loss clients yesterday, one of whom is making great progress, the other of whom is making limited progress, let's say. He's become very strong, but he needs to shift some weight, and he fundamentally, he's a great case in point, because he fundamentally needs to really change the way he thinks about food. And how he eats, and the volume that he eats.
Yeah.
And then personally, I've started my own formal training plan for my next assault on Trail Marathon Wales, my second assault on Trail Marathon Wales at the end of June.
Blimey.
I hadn't realised before you said that you could actually do a marathon as a trail run. I thought you just did a marathon as a flat run. I didn't realise it.
No, they're all over. When I've been in the Alps, there's marathons going on all over in like Chamonix and stuff.
Yeah.
Just insane.
Crazy.
Yeah.
You've
got to be fit, Conrad, to do that.
Yeah, you definitely have to be. It's a very good question, that. You have to be fit. But quite often when you ask somebody, are you, or if somebody says to me, are you fit? I go, well, yeah, I'm quite fit. But because you're never as fit as you want to be.
Yeah.
So I would say now for you, Sean, you're a runner and you are fit. But that, it's a bit like standing in the mirror and looking at yourself and saying, I am amazing, because nobody else is going to tell you that until you believe it yourself. But it's the same with when it comes to
part of your daily routine then.
I spin naked in front of the mirror going, I love you. It's the Greek god syndrome. Everybody should.
I think we're kind of nicely segmenting into this week's topic, really, which is healthy body.
You haven't told us about your week.
On my week?
Yeah, how's your week been?
Flipping heck, yeah. Same old. What have I got written here? Nothing days are the best. I had one of those quite cool weekends. Well, I was here on Sunday. We were chatting about exciting things we got in the pipeline for living in the present.
Yeah.
But Saturday, I had one of those nothing days where we woke up as a little fam and we didn't have to do anything. And there was like no one really telling us where we needed to be. Didn't have any plans. And sometimes, and quite often those days, I find, end up being the best kind of days, nothing days.
It's interesting, when I do the relaxation discs, I always use a phrase, and it's the phrase of, nobody wants anything and nobody needs anything, all you've got to do is just relax. And the amount of women that say to me, you know, when you said that, I just went, yeah, and relaxed, because at last, nobody wanted anything, no one needed anything. And having a day like that is wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, so we ended up doing things, like we didn't just sit there in silence all day. It's kind of hard, 2-year-old. We ended up in Liverpool having dinner and meeting some friends and just walking around and having coffee and Waterstones.
Chillaxing.
Beautiful.
Yeah, cool.
Beautiful.
Good.
So, yeah, do nothing.
Yeah.
But do things within that nothing.
Yeah. Doing nothing is doing something.
So that's what I've done, Sean, this week.
That's cool.
Topic of the week, healthy body, healthy mind. We've been trying to get engineer a way of getting Conrad on this show for a while. Here we all are. A clever man called, I keep wanting to say Hippocrates, but it's Hippocrates. About 2,500 years ago, give or take 500 years, once said, walking is man's best medicine. So I've been keen to talk on this show about the relationship between physical activity and health and well-being. There's an obvious link there. So where do we start, chaps? Where do we start?
Conrad.
There's quite a lot of studies that show physical activity improves the mind in many different ways. So from some of the things that we now know about depression and anxiety, physical activity, 30 minutes a day will cure mild to moderate depression. So if you're on any Prozac-oriented or Prozac-based drugs, mild to moderate depression can be cured. You can remove your dependence on that drug through exercise.
You have to put the health warning there. If you're coming off your medication, do it with your GP.
Yes, absolutely. Tell your GP. And when we talk about GPs as well, you know, just going off the studies for a minute, GPs are generally quite accepting that physical activity will help.
Generally.
But there's not enough clinical evidence, and there's not enough formal sort of training or, if you like, internal medical world press release to tell them that they can say that?
Okay. There is sufficient evidence that both mindfulness and exercise, we're looking at halving medications.
Yeah.
And I have clients, like bipolar clients, who have halved their medication yeah. by doing mindfulness and by doing exercise.
Right.
So, I mean, it is there.
So why aren't there more studies, man? Is it the evil pharmaceutical companies burying all this evidence?
I support that as a conspiracy theorist. I support that.
I think that is an issue. If you're making your money out of selling a product, you don't want someone to come along and say, hey, you don't need this product, do you?
If we all mysteriously, the three of us, like, disappear
next week.
Tell our story, world. Tell our story.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's real. And one of the things I find with GPs is that a GP will tend to prescribe the same medication to the same to different patients, but it's almost as though that's their favourite medication, or okay. is it that that's the last drug rep that came into the shop, kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I think I say what I say about GPs because I think quite a lot of the time they will counsel their patients' views on physical activity, and they'll take that. They'll take that almost first and foremost over and above prescribing physical activity as a solution to their depression.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people will say, and it might be for some other physical reason, they might be significantly overweight and unable to exercise, or in their mind be unable to exercise. But if a GP says, you know, right, you've got to go and join this gym, and you've got to go and do 3 runs a week and 1 brisk walk a week and come back and see me in 4 weeks and tell me how you're doing, a lot of patients will just look at the GP and say, oh, can't you just give me a pill?
But also from the GP's point of view,
I don't like getting hot and sweaty. That's you know, there's that, undoubtedly there's a lot of patients with that mindset.
But the GP's got a limited amount of time too, so that conversation may be cut short by the need. But that the idea that you just alluded to there, I've had loads of clients who say, I need to lose some weight before I go to the gym. Yes. And it's because they don't want to be seen in the situation their body is the way that it is. So they want to get thinner before they go to the gym, but they have to go to the gym to get thinner. It's the chicken and egg.
It is, yeah. And I get that with my hour of power classes. Quite often people say, oh, I've heard about your hour of power classes, and I've heard that it gets really good results in terms of toning the body, in terms of helping with lower back pain, in terms of, I mean, even people with conditions like fibromyalgia, where there's no known medication, but it has helped the symptoms of, you know, illnesses where there's some deep-rooted nerve issue going on, or stress-related issue going on. And it just takes quite a lot of persuasion, but not persuasion's the wrong word, a lot of talking from me to say to the person, just come along and give it your best shot, and I'll always give people alternatives so they don't feel they have to, you know, keep up with the fastest, strongest person in the class.
One of the things that you said to me that made a difference to me, sort of from a motivational, psychological point of view, was you said to me, you don't have to keep running, you can walk if you need to. And that was like a revelation, and it was almost because I knew that I could walk if I needed to, I didn't have to. It was like it was an odd thing. So once I knew it was okay to stop, I just keep going.
I can't take credit for that, though. I mean, that was a chap called Jeff Galloway who ran for USA in the Olympics, I think 72, 76, and 80. He was picked for the 80 team. Obviously, the US didn't go to Moscow. But he came up with the walk-run method, and he was the one who really sort of, and still does, lauds it from on high as a great way to get into running, and a great way to run if you're coming back from injury.
Cool.
Yeah, I got his book that you recommended. Maybe we should put that up on the show notes.
Yeah, maybe we will. Jeff Galloway.
Jeff Galloway.
Cool. There's a cool and very popular video on YouTube by a clever chap called Dr. Mike Evans. 23 and a half hours, what is the single thing we can do for our health? It's kind of a 10-minute animated little lecture. Really cool, but I'd like to talk about that, Conrad, because basically half an hour a day of moderate exercise will do wonders.
It will do wonders for just about everyone. You know, unless you're sort of Kelly Holmes or Mo Farah and you're looking to get to the pinnacle of athletic achievement. But really, half an hour a day will mediate just about every single health condition you can think of. It'll reduce the risk of cancer, heart disease and stroke by up to 50%.
Blimey.
It will reduce high blood pressure, and if you keep at it, that 30 minutes a day, every day, chances are you'll remove the high blood pressure issue and probably get off your medication. Obviously with your GP's consent and all those important caveats.
That's a disclaimer.
It can reverse type 2 diabetes. It will reduce stress and stress-related issues. And like we talked about at the start, mild to moderate depression. And a whole host of endless other things. There's studies that show knee pain, arthritis-related knee pain, will come down of the order of 48%. Post-operation hip replacements, pain and lack of movement in post-operation hip replacements can be improved through exercise.
Can you run on a hip, on a replacement?
Replaced hip, yeah.
Yeah. And what about knees? Can you run on knees?
You can run on replacement knees, yeah. I think a lot of it depends on the person and how heavy they are and whether they are suited to running or not. Because some people, even, you know, fit, healthy 20-somethings or late teens, just don't enjoy running, or they're just not suited to it, and they get shin splints and various injuries.
Yeah, what's kind of
so then maybe they have to do cycling.
I mean, I'm only a slight little chap, but for the two alpine mountaineering trips I've been on, the first one I tried getting in shape by running, didn't enjoy it, had quite a lot of trouble with my knees, and when I was actually in Chamonix climbing, I didn't feel that well prepared. Second time I went, a couple of years later, I did lots of cycling. Like just, well, not super lots, kind of twice a week I'd go out for a 20-25 mile ride.
Yeah.
And I felt so much better prepared for that next trip. I kind of breezed up.
Yeah.
Grand Paradiso, got up to 4,000 metres, no sweat, man. Just felt brilliant. Yeah. So for some people, I think cycling's a great one. It's less resistant, or less impact on your knees and your joints, isn't it, right?
Far, far less impact on the joints. I mean, I know a couple of cyclists who have had hip replacements, and one of them still races. Another one will still ride significantly long distances, you know, 80 miles or 100 miles on a Sunday in a reasonable time.
Shout out for my dad. Last Wednesday, he texts me. He usually goes out, he's retired now, and he goes out on Wednesday bike rides with some pals or a little group. And he texts me saying he was halfway there and he'd done 30 odd miles. Texts me later on and he'd done a 78 mile bike ride, man, on a Wednesday afternoon.
Good.
Amazing, you know, my dad's got 62, 63, something like that.
Yeah.
I saw him the next day and he was fine.
Yeah.
Looking after my little lad, actually, which is probably harder work than riding 80 miles. he was up for it the next day.
And in my spinning classes, I have a couple of people who've had hip replacements.
Yeah.
One lady who's had double hip replacement. And she keeps up, and you wouldn't know. If she didn't tell you that she'd had a double hip replacement, you would not know.
Yeah.
One day I was in North Africa doing a yoga thing, and I'm sat next to a German lady who was 82, I think, and her legs were just amazing. She did all kinds of things with her legs. And I said to her when we finished, I said, "I'm not sitting next to you again. You're just so embarrassing. Your legs are so loose." And she said, "It's four hips." And she could do absolutely anything with her hips, but I couldn't do it. Really, really clever. You know, you talk about half an hour a day. Does it make any difference, or is it better if you did 40 minutes a day, or 50 minutes a day, or 60 minutes a day? Do you get more benefit if you do more?
You get more benefit if you do more, but it's that first 30 minutes that gives you the first 30 minutes gives you a large amount of the health benefit, and then the time after that gives you more health benefit, but not as much as that first 30 minutes. So if all you can do is 30 minutes, then that is going to make a significant difference.
I can remember this.
Sort of reasonably sort of, I would call it moderate to vigorous intensity. There's quite a lot of studies on the level of sort of heart rate or the level of vigor that you have to exercise at, from, you know, walking the dog is good enough to walking the dog is not good enough.
Yep.
To doing an aerobics class is really where you want to get to, and you want to be at the point where you're breathing so hard that you can talk just about, you couldn't hold a conversation like we are now, but
We should have done this podcast while running or something.
So you'd be on the bike.
Maybe next time. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I think Dr. Mike Evans in Toronto, his whole suite of little videos that he's put together are all very interesting. And the message behind 23 and a half hours is a very clever one. I shouldn't spoil it really by saying how he, but he gets to the end and he says, you know, what do you, if for 23 and a half hours of the day we are sort of eating, sleeping, working, watching TV, cooking, etc., then surely we can find 30 minutes in the day to exercise. And one of the big messages in that video is that for overweight and obese people, who are often least likely to exercise because they just don't like exercising, or they get too hot, or they think they might injure themselves, they of the whole population of people, they get the biggest benefit, because if you're obese and you don't exercise, and that's really bad news. That is, you know, the health risks in terms of high blood pressure, coronary heart disease, type 2 diabetes risk are all really, really high. But as soon as people in that category start to exercise, those health risks drop dramatically, you know, of the order of sort of 40%, 50%, those health risks. Which, you know, in a way, if I say that, in a way that could sort of put me out of the job, because you just leave all these people in their overweight or obese state, and as long as they're doing some exercise, they're going to massively reduce all their health risks. That's a good thing.
Fantastic. The Canadians seem pretty switched on. We got the Canadian Mental Health Association, they've got some quotes and stats, and they've been talking about endorphins produced in the brain and all sorts. So shout out to our Canadian cousins, because they seem to be pretty switched on.
They are. It's interesting. I refer to quite a lot of Canadian resources, Canadian nutrition resources. Obviously, what you're just talking about, Ed, Canadian Mental Health Association. Mike Evans, who's a Canadian GP. And some of the Canadians refer to our good old NHS, and they'll have links to our NHS website.
Cool.
Right.
And they see it as a very good source of information.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
because it takes a lot of stick, but I think it does a very good job.
Yeah, I think it's incredible, really. But yeah, we like to, I mean, you try and improve it all the time, aren't we, and criticise, but it's an amazing resource, really. That's my resource of the week, the NHS. So hopefully you'll never need it.
Everybody should go and try it now.
Yeah, go and try it.
But we talk about obese and overweight people, and the issue this is creating, obviously one in three, slightly more than one in three in the US, fall into that category.
What's the actual definition of obese, or like what is it, about body fat percentage?
It's,
or?
Well, it's all based from BMI, body mass index, so how heavy you are compared to your height.
Yeah.
So obese is anyone with a BMI of over 30.
Do you agree with that, like, definition? Is
For the broad population, I think it's a fair indicator. But when I start to work with people, I think it's far more important to look at the actual body fat percentage and look at measurements of hips, waist, thighs, bust. Those are far but sort of better indicators, because you do get female bodybuilders who've got very high BMI, but they've actually got very low body fat.
Yeah.
And it's just because they've got lots and lots of muscle.
Yeah.
That they are heavy.
Yeah.
So I think BMI as a general indicator is good, but let's not get obsessed with it. And a little bit like figure on scales, it's a useful indicator, but let's not get obsessed with it. There's better measures.
Sure.
Yeah. But is it true that muscle is heavier than fat? Therefore, you can get thinner but be heavier.
That's a very good question. I love that question, because I try and put, whenever I do a nutrition, a specific nutrition plan for people, I try and put in a picture of what that really means.
Yeah.
So for the listeners, if you clench your fist and imagine that is a kilogram of fat, then in the other hand, if you clench two fingers and a thumb, that's a kilogram of muscle.
Wow.
So if you think of it as one fist would be a kilogram of fat, half a fist would be a kilogram of muscle. So it's more a volume thing.
Okay.
This, is muscle heavier than fat? If you had a typical 500 milliliter jug full of fat, mm-hmm. that would be heavier than a 500 milliliter jug full of muscle.
Yeah. I used to like the question at school. You used to play on your mates. What's heavier, a ton of bricks or a ton of feathers?
Yeah, right.
A ton of bricks, obviously. Yeah, yeah.
So when someone goes through a weight loss program, the more muscle they can build, the better. You know, that's really the thing. The population is trying is to get its head around. We need to find a good and simple way of getting that.
But does that mean that it's better to measure rather than weigh?
I think weighing is part of the equation, but it's nothing like the beyond end all. You know, if there was no scales and all we could do was measure, then that'd be far better.
Yeah.
If we couldn't measure and there's only scales, then I don't think I would actually bother. I'd say just a lot of the folks I work with, I'll focus on clothes sizes or dress sizes, and that's a far better indicator of whether they're making progress than not.
I was weighing myself when we started all this, and once I'd lost it over a stone, it didn't seem relevant to weigh myself. It's not an issue anymore. It's the other things.
That is absolutely right, Sean, and you are sort of a model student in that respect. When I was studying my master trainer qualification, we did a fictional study of twins. So one twin goes on a fundamental, good old fashioned calorie reduced diet, and the other twin goes on a nutrition plan with reduced calorie intake but a very significant exercise element. So twin A loses a lot of weight, but a lot of that is muscle as well as fat, so lean body mass as well as fat.
Yeah.
Twin B loses less weight because she only loses a smaller amount of fat, and she maintains her lean muscle, and she actually builds muscle because she's doing lots of training. Mm-hmm. And that's partly why there's a study done last year it was completed last year in the States and in the UK, a joint study which was over 3 years, and looked at something like 6,000 people who'd gone through some sort of diet, typically focused on weight loss, so the number on the scales, mm-hmm. and typically going through things that we know work for some folks, like Weight Watchers, Slimmer World, those sorts of things. And so everybody had lost weight, but within 3 years, this is the scary thing, 95% of the people who lost weight had put it back on.
Yep, okay.
And half of that 95% had put more on. And that's because their weight loss, they'd lost too much muscle. And so when it started to creep back on, they were putting more fat back on their body. So the ratio of lean body mass to fat for them had gone down.
Yeah.
In my world with brains, I see the relationship between, especially the people eating carbohydrates, and the self-medication, because the carbohydrates make the brain secrete serotonin. So it's the same as taking antidepressants. Yeah. And when they say that Britain is the heaviest country in Europe, my suspicion is that Britain is the most depressed country in Europe because everyone's self-medicating with carbs,
yeah.
you know, takeaways or whatever, to feel better. And I wonder whether one of the issues I see with people where they go on a diet, they lose loads of weight, but they don't change the fundamental issues about how they feel. Mm-hmm. So when they stop the diet, they go back on the carbs to get the serotonin again and build back up. So that from looking at it psychologically, the idea of losing weight as a regime is great as long as there's an emotional change, which is the motivational bit, isn't it? There has to be that change of self, that change of sense of self, whether it is esteem or whatever it is that people need to work.
This is why we talked about this before we came on, about you try and stage progress for clients rather than just kind of going cold turkey on their existing lifestyle or diet. You kind of encourage them to make little baby steps throughout the progress.
It's goal set. I mean, the first thing I do with all clients is spend some time goal setting. Mm-hmm. That I can recall doing that with you, Sean. We just sat in the other room when you were injured, and we just had a chat for about 45 minutes to an hour on goals and goal setting, and how you will feel when you get to a certain goal. And so it doesn't really matter whether it's whether it's somebody training for a marathon or whether it's somebody trying to get into the wedding dress and they don't want to be big in their wedding photos and they don't want to be buying a size 24 wedding dress.
Yeah.
The goal has to, there has to be a big sort of outcome goal at the end of it, but it's just too big a jump to get there in one massive big leap. So we have to break that down into smaller process goals that are quite tangible. And some of those things are really simple. I mean, for everybody, if we said, right, this week, every day, I'm going to drink 2 litres of water, then that's a nice tangible goal.
Yeah. Mm.
And some people will find that really hard, and others will find it really easy. They'll go, there's always some folks who say, well, I drink 3 litres. So that's a tick, done, give me the next goal, please. Mm-hmm. It's too easy.
Yeah.
But it's very important to break it down, and it definitely from the point of view of people who lose weight and then put it back on, or people who are sort of self-medicating, as you say, Sean, with carbs and other drink and food.
Yeah.
Just being able to have sort of small measures of progress is really, really important. Mm-hmm. Being able to give themselves that pat on the back.
And does that help as well in... Sorry, Sean.
No,
cut across. Does that help in terms of making sure that people don't slip back into old ways if they've done it in little short steps?
It does help. It does help. But undoubtedly for a lot of people, they can go through some sort of... Whether they're going through a kickstart weight loss programme with me or they're going through a general fitness programme or some other protocol out there, there is always a point where they get to the end of that phase and they have to go back to normal. And sometimes that's when they need most help. Mm-hmm. So I actually have this ethos that the kickstart weight loss programme and losing weight in that first sort of 8 to 10 weeks is actually quite straightforward. The hard part is maintaining it afterwards. So for some folks, if they've cut out alcohol totally because alcohol reduces your ability to burn fat,
yeah.
And then they go back to having alcohol in their life, which is fine. I never tell people to stop drinking. That's totally up to them whether they want to or whether they don't want to.
Good, good.
It's difficult. It can be difficult because there is always that issue, that risk that they will just go back to all the old habits.
Yeah.
Fortunately, most of the people I've worked with have been really pleased with how they felt from exercising. So they've had all the positive benefits of exercise in terms of better energy levels, better sleep, mm-hmm. less stress, and nice things that sort of almost life-changing things when they say to me, it's great, I can run around with little Thomas in the park now, and I couldn't do that last summer. Mm. You know, and that's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And on the one hand, people say that to me, and I think, oh, that's great, you know, that's quite, altruistically, that's really quite life-changing. And then there's another little, it must be the Scottish penny-pinching mercenary part of me thinks, well, what's that worth?
Yeah,
I don't know what it's worth.
When you're doing a marathon?
Yeah. One of the motivators for me to start exercising was going into a changing room that had glass on three sides.
Right.
And trying on a pair of trousers. And when I tried on the trousers, I could see myself from every angle. You know, people talk about a muffin top.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, my God, look at the state of you, man. You
know, sort it out, Sean.
Yeah, time to sort it out, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a big motivation.
You had a good look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Well, there's an interesting... There's University of Oslo, is something I was looking at yesterday. They did a study, 2012, about how we perceive ourselves and specifically focused on what they call... body areas of satisfaction, and they did appearance evaluations, and they found that people, once they got fit, men and women, equal scores on both sides of the fence, people felt better about themselves. They had a perceived athletic competence about themselves,
yep.
as well as a perceived athletic confidence.
Mm.
And it sort of increased... the people they studied, increased their self-worth, made them feel better as people.
When I was a teenager, I worked on a building site for a year, so I did a winter and a summer. And it was fascinating watching the guys, because when they were dressed in winter clothes, their posture was completely different. In the summer, when they were just wearing a pair of shorts and a pair of boots, they stood more upright and they had much greater sense of self when they were on the scaffold. Yeah, and a lot of them were quite muscular, so it was like kind of body beautiful stuff. But as soon as it was when they took the clothes off that suddenly they had body awareness they didn't have when they had the donkey jacket on. Yeah.
That's interesting.
I'm going to move the conversation on a bit here. That's my role here today.
Okay.
So seamlessly as ever. Yeah. Now I want to bring things on to kind of to nutrition and the kind of food aspect of things, Conrad, which I know is something, again, you could talk for hours. We've got about 15, 20 minutes.
Okay.
Tops. But there's all sorts of research and more articles coming out and about what you should and shouldn't be eating. I know a couple of other trainers, and I met someone actually on Monday who's backed up something that I've heard, saying basically food wise if it grew in the from the ground,
yeah,
or if it had 2-4 legs and was running around at some point, then it's good. Like, just stick to those things and you'll be fine.
I totally agree with that. Eating as natural as you possibly can is definitely the way forward. I get hit by my wife when we're in a restaurant and the waiter comes over and says, would you like the dessert menu? And before anyone can say anything, I go, sugar is the devil! And she says, shut up, stop going. But I think that's my big bugbear is sugar and the way it's become so prevalent in so many foods. So, you know, from breakfast cereals, which is, I used to work for Kellogg's 10 years ago, you know, they used to add sugar to make things taste better so they would go down well in focus groups, and then they'd end up on the shelves and then they'd fly off the shelves.
Yep.
Sugar is 1/100 the price it was today versus 100 years ago.
Bit back.
That's another subject for another day. Global sugar economics. we know that in the early 80s, the British Sugar Foundation sponsored a lot of studies into saturated fat and its effect on the heart and blockage of arteries. Now, I'm not saying that saturated fat is good. It's not actually as bad.
Well, it was a few weeks ago, I think I saw something saying that it's not now linked to heart disease and that kind of thing.
Well, one of my clients was saying yesterday, he's been struggling eating breakfast, and I've said to him, break the fast, you've got to have breakfast every day, otherwise your body's going to have a sugar crash. Mm. Or you're going to have a blood sugar crash. You're going to have
so sugar's
crash.
Good.
Well, sugar, sugar from the right sources. I mean, that's the couple of things. So he was sort of saying, well, I had a cooked breakfast twice a week, so is that okay? I feel quite bad that I've had that. I said, well, that's great. If you're going from having no breakfast to having a small cooked breakfast, which is all it is, it's not sort of piled high, triple black pudding, fried bread, etc., etc.
Yeah.
It's better than having nothing. It will get its hormone balance right.
Okay.
In terms of sugar, yes, we need sugar. Carbohydrate is fundamentally sugar. Sugar is the fundamental building block of glycogen, which is derived obviously from glucose, which is what gives us the energy to stand up, walk around, move our arms, etc. But it's sugar is a very complicated subject because, you know, there's a lot of different base sugars, lactose, glucose, fructose, etc., that go together to make up the family of foods called sugar.
Yeah, well, I've
some are good, some
seen
are bad.
Some research now saying that fructose wise, that you should be not having a huge amount of fruit in your diet, even. I know in the UK now we've got the advice is now seven a day rather than 5 a day fruit and veg. So is that
9 and 10 in
Europe? It kind of 5 veg, 2 fruit?
I think if you come back to your original question, we should eat as raw and natural as we possibly can. We shouldn't overcook food. We should and you shouldn't. If you pick up a box of a processed meal because you want to have something quick because you know you're going out that night, find something that's got as little additives in it as possible. And by additives, I mean things that you don't know what they are.
Yeah.
So things like guar gum and odd preservatives, calcium carbonate, things that you maybe don't know what they are. Unless you're a chemistry teacher, you'll know what calcium carbonate is. It's lime. It's chalk.
Acetylene gas, I think.
When Sean and I were at school, they used calcium carbonate right on a blackboard.
They did.
You will find calcium carbonate in a lot of processed foods. And also in a lot of meal replacement shakes. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no reason to be eating chalk that children might play with. And in the same vein, you know, there's no reason to add sugar to a lot of the products that it ends up in. So I picked up a jar of mustard the other day, and there was sugar in it.
Yeah.
Why is there sugar in mustard?
Yeah, I do not know. Well, I look on the side of my cereal packets now, and I have healthy, what I thought were healthy cereals for breakfast, Weetabix.
Yeah.
You know, well, the Asda version of Shreddies. But there's already sugar in them. If you look on the side
and
of the
then packet, you put sugar then, on top.
You know, my instinct is to put sugar on top as well. And my son, he has them too, and he's like, sugar, daddy, sugar. Well, pretend to sprinkle some on.
A good alternative is to try honey. Because it is a lower, creates a lower glycemic load in terms of suddenly spiking the sugars in the body.
I'm a big honey fan.
And even better than honey is agave syrup, which is slightly harder to get hold of. Most health food shops will have it. It's agave syrup is widely used in Central America and South America. It's an even lower glycemic load or glycemic index than sugar. Glycemic load and glycemic index is quite simply how quickly the food will spike your blood sugar and make you feel sort of energetic and alive and awake. And we want things that are nice, slow-release sugars that keep us feeling constantly, a constant, steady release of energy throughout the day.
Gabby's
good.
Can I just push the conversation a bit as well? And
that's my job.
It's my turn. Yeah. Human beings, certainly over here, lived before we had the sugar plantations and the sugar. You know, we all survived and lived and evolved.
We did.
Yeah. And one of the things that we were talking about earlier on, which I want to come back to, is the thing about the evolutionary idea about exercise and the way that we've changed our lifestyles. You were talking about that process of time. You had a timeline that you were talking about.
Yeah. Of technology,
because it's interesting to look at that, but then set against the Ed's comment, which was yes, but they didn't live as long as we do.
Mm.
So, what's your timeline, Conrad?
Well, it's I mean, it's something I've talked a lot about generally. It's the last two our diet, our gut is sort of fighting. I'm trying to do the maths in my head. Something like 199,800 years of evolution, and it's only the last 200 years where we've had readily available food.
Yep.
And we've gone from being an agrarian society, particularly in the West, to being industrialised. And so my timeline was 1804, steam engine invented. 1876, telephone. 1902, car, the Ford Model T. 1943, jet plane. 1967, the ATM. So we no longer needed to walk to the bank to cash a cheque.
Yeah.
And then somewhere around 1925, the TV was invented. 1950s, they came into the home. The 80s, the cell phone. The 90s, internet.
Well, things are just spiking now, man.
So, you know, all of a sudden we'd gone from being pretty much hunter-gatherers or people who had to walk to a market to get food, to, you know, it's there for us, it's easy to get, and we don't have to do as much physical activity to get it, to get food or to wash clothes or whatever.
There's even talk now in terms of, this is super advanced technology, but should be here soon-ish, 3D printing. And actually being able to print our own food, having like a microwave-shaped thing. And it basically building your food for you, based on all these particles firing in. This is serious stuff, like, honestly.
Yeah. Space age.
So you just push a button, say what you want, and it'll just create it for you.
But can you press the organic bean button as opposed to the synthesised steak button?
Depends on how it tastes.
Well, if we can come back to battering the big inks and PLCs of the world, pharmaceuticals, food industries, diet industry companies.
Yeah.
I mean, we know the companies that would embrace that technology. Domino's, McDonald's, Monsanto, etc. And that's, it would be, I think that technology would be great. I would sort of embrace that myself, but we kind of know that the big food companies are the ones that will embrace it to sell products that are relatively cheap to produce.
Yep.
And add a whole load of shareholder value to them, but create and add to the obesity epidemic.
Was it last year, was it someone produced a burger out of, was it just, it was, how do they make it? I can't remember. It got quite a lot of publicity. I think Google had pumped a load of money into it, but basically it wasn't a burger from a cow. It was basically a burger that had been grown in like a Petri dish.
And oh, right, it was actually grown meat.
$200,000 burger or something like that. Yeah. And it tasted all right. Like they cooked it in.
But that's a bit like there are meat alternatives that are grown as fungi, aren't they?
Yeah.
That you get.
Yeah. That's a bit.
But I think the sort of what's happened in the last 200 years is quite interesting because, you know, Homo sapiens, we evolved as endurance athletes. The whole reason we became the master species on the planet was because we could outrun and out-hunt anything.
Hmm.
Lions, no problem, we can out-hunt lions. Horses, dogs, hyenas were the only things that gave us trouble because they were the only things that were built for endurance running, but we could still hunt them down because we could regulate our body temperature better. So a hyena, they can run 4 miles, but eventually they will overheat.
Yeah.
Horses are the same, eventually they'll overheat and keel over.
Yeah, we are pretty awesome, we humans. I guess we need to look at where we want to be. Where are we going to be 100,000 years from now? Are we going to have no legs and no arms and just be little brains floating around?
Well, you were talking about that. Is it a case of the human being in the future doesn't have arms, you know, doesn't need them, doesn't need legs?
Yeah. We are the masters of our own evolution now, aren't we?
Yeah, is it that in this drive to get healthy and go back and do running and stuff like that, we're actually regressing rather than progressing?
Yeah,
well, it would be great to jump in the TARDIS and just jump forward 10,000 years. My own view is I think people will evolve in different ways. So if we carry on with the sort of the polar opposites of people like Sean, who are sort of embracing getting fit and really enjoying it and losing weight as a result and getting stronger as a result and reversing the aging process as well.
Yep.
Because what you're doing is building a lot of positive cells in the muscles and in the brain. So you are fundamentally reversing the aging process, which is great.
Yep.
Benjamin Button over here. Yeah.
And then you've got the people beyond Sean, you know, the Kelly Holmes, Mo Farahs, etc., and all the sort of good amateur athletes that we have who will carry on evolving and hopefully will all stay strong and fit.
Yep.
Despite the little injuries they might get. And then on the other side we've got obese people and people who just eat too much, or maybe they're depressed, maybe they've got some other issue going on in their life and that's why they eat. And I could see a situation where we end up with different types of Homo sapiens. So we'll have Homo sapiens and whatever the Latin word is for a beast tagged on there, and we'll have Homo sapiens athletica. Sean, you'll be all right, you'll be fine. Your descendants will be Homo sapiens athletica.
Okay. not the chobbly lot.
But I can see a situation where that will happen, and a little bit like going back, I don't know, 300,000 years where we had Neanderthals existing at the same time as Homo sapiens developing.
Mm-hmm.
We may go back to that sort of state.
Two species.
Two different species, and one will survive longer than the other.
Yeah. I mean, the root idea behind all the progress over the last 200 years is people want to live longer, don't they?
Yeah.
Because being alive is pretty cool, generally, I think.
If you're having a good time, it's pretty good.
Yeah. And we've succeeded on that, haven't we? The average age, is it kind of plateauing now a little bit?
Well, no, they're still saying that 1 in 4 people alive in Britain now will live to over 100.
Cool.
Average death age of a woman is creeping up to 96. Men are like 5-6 years behind, but they're catching up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, most of the people that are listening to this will be living into their 90s at least.
Mm, and it's what kind of 90-year-old do you want to be is the question, isn't it?
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's from the point of view of brain function and keeping all your marbles in one place, I mean, exercise is right in there at the top of keeping it there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see little Keith. I know I mention him every week, but I learn a lot from my little lad. And I see the days when he is out and about a lot, running around in the garden, or we've gone out and done something cool, versus the days when we've been stuck inside, or we've been at an event inside all day and he hasn't been moving. He sleeps better, obviously, and we can all relate to that, I'm sure, when we've been out doing something. But he's just generally more pleasant as well.
Yeah, yeah. but that's the mood issue, isn't it? If you exercise, your mood goes up. I had dogs at one point when I had the farm, and one of the dogs I had inherited from to save it from being killed was a little Chihuahua. And the Chihuahua used to do what the other dog did. If I was out gathering sheep, then the Chihuahua was out gathering sheep. And he was a very well-natured...
Chihuahua.
Yeah, he was a very well-natured little thing. And people would say that the dogs, Chihuahuas particularly, were quite snappy and horrible. But the vet said to me, no, it's because people keep them on their lap and they never get any exercise. Right. So they must have never had any good endorphins in their brain because they didn't run around.
Cool.
Whereas Mouse, which is my little one, would run up the side of the mountain in Wales. And he was great. He was a good character.
Little Mouse, that was his name.
I wanted to call him Fang, but the kids called him Mouse.
Lessons from Mouse, love it. Yeah. Okay, cool. I think we've about covered most things. I mean, one thing we've got here mentioned at the bottom of our notes is about the importance of having a mentor as well. You know, some people like to do things on their own and kind of not take advice too much. And there is a lot of advice in this sector, the health sector, nutrition especially. Yeah. But you've got to be big enough, bold enough to say you need a hand every now and again, right?
Yeah, I think you have to be big enough and bold enough to put your hand up and ask for advice. And undoubtedly, it is... There's so much information, confusing information out there. You know, from meal replacements to Weight Watchers to the 5-2 fast diet to Rosemary Conley's good old fat-free diet,
yeah,
which I completely disagree with. Because you've one thing, anybody out there who's trying to lose weight, you've got to eat fat to lose fat.
Wow. Yeah.
If you stop eating fat... 200,000 years of evolution, the body says there's something happening serious. There must be an ice age happening. There must be a flood coming. Something bad must be about to happen. If you're not giving me any fat, there must be something really, really bad about to happen. So guess what? I'm just going to lock down my fat stores and not use any of them at all.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just like seed.
So you've got to eat fat to lose fat. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that in terms of the voice... Having the mentor voice. I mean, the amount of clients would say to me, I was in this situation, and I think, what would Sean say to me now?
Mm-hmm.
I know when I've been running on my own and I'm out there doing something, and I think, what would Conrad say to me now?
Yeah.
And I think having that mentor voice.
Yeah.
I mean, back along when I did my monastic thing, and I had to take vows to my mentor, and I had to do it. I was told, which is quite useful for me. But the issues of having an external voice.
Yeah.
Is very powerful. Obviously, the voice needs to be a benevolent voice that works to your benefit. But I think that is a powerful part of the human personality.
Yeah. I think I totally agree. Mentors and people who you find as an inspiration. And by that, I mean regular people. So, you know, we can say Bradley Wiggins, the cyclist, or yeah. Chris Hoy. These people, yeah, they're great inspirations, but they're sort of high public figures who maybe have an almost mythical
yeah.
presence to them. Last year at a running event and in the run up to the Chester Half Marathon, I met a guy from Buckley Running Club called Peter, 71 years old, sharp as a tack mentally, you know, just a great person to talk to, a great person to run with, because the stories and things he would talk about from sort of science to politics to music, to just fun subjects was amazing.
Yep.
And a great, for me, people like that are a great inspiration. Super healthy, super fit. Still goes running with a couple of his pals from North Wales up Malvamai once a week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that, you know, no, and has no sort of fear of doing anything like that at all. And really is living well as an older person.
Beautiful.
And far fitter than probably most people who are half his age.
Yeah.
So I find people like that great. And yeah, and in terms of mentors, certainly, a chap I know, a fellow spinning instructor, he's a great mentor for me, because he's just qualified for the GB duathlon team and will be representing his age group for Great Britain in Spain in September.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's been giving me some advice about how to structure my own training, which is quite nice. You know, I think it's important for... it doesn't matter what your specialism or your expertise is, or what your role in life is, to find someone who can.
Yeah, I mean, the whole mental thing as well is linked to what we talk about all the time, Sean, in terms of the importance of learning, right? Just keep learning.
Yeah.
I've got written down here, keep moving, keep learning.
Yeah.
Get those two things going.
Yeah.
You're exercising your mind, getting your body moving, and you're just going to go up and up and up.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to die at some point, because that's just the way it works.
We're all going to die. The trick is dying with a smile on your face.
I mean, how many people have you worked with, Sean? They're working in the other direction. They're moving less. So they're getting less healthy, they're learning less.
Getting more depressed.
More depressed.
Yeah.
So just...
That's spiral down.
Easy for me to say, but yeah.
Yeah, we need to be spiralling up, not spiralling down.
But 30 minutes a day, man.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah, and people will say to me, I haven't got 30 minutes a day. But they'll nip out and have over an hour where they'll nip out and smoke cigarettes. They can do that. Think of it.
Yeah. So that, yeah.
Or they'll watch two episodes of Coronation Street in one night.
Yeah.
Mm. So... You know.
And you can do that. You can do that on your phone now. You go for a walk and watch Curry.
You can get those Google glasses where you can watch things while you run.
Yeah, or you can get your waterproof headset and a waterproof iPhone case and do it while you're swimming.
Swimming, yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to add in, chaps, before we
I'm good. Well?
I did have a quote from the Buddha, no less, which I think is quite well out there on the net. To keep the body in good health is a duty. Otherwise, we should not be able to keep our mind strong and clear.
Yes.
In the tradition that I came from, it was the body is the temple of the soul, and you should look after your temple. Mm. You know, you'd always clean it. And
yeah, sure. I don't have a tradition or any anything to add, really. I've done enough. I've said enough already. But let's go on to our resource of the week, which I haven't got one written down here, but I'll think of one quickly. But Sean, you've got...
I'm going to put two down. One is Map My Run, which is an app, which has been a real inspiration for me, because every time I go for a run, it gives me an actual map of where I've run and tells me the rates I did it at, and that's very kind of inspirational for me at the moment, which is good. And the other thing that I want to shout out for is there's a website called fulldocumentary.com, which is amazing. You can get documentaries going back years. There's thousands of them on there.
Cool.
And they're all in different sections. I was watching some on food we were talking about, and the milk industry and stuff like that, documentary. Right. Really, really good. Worth having a look at.
Cool. Have one in the background while you're working away.
I will certainly be looking at that. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
The resources I've put down are Dr. Mike Evans' YouTube videos, which are very easily found on good old YouTube. He has his video on exercise as medicine, the 23 and a half hours principle. And he's also got interesting videos on diabetes and acne for teenagers, and indeed videos about cancer and stroke. And they're all very useful, very helpful, explain these conditions in an easy way. And a good book, The Chimp Paradox by Dr. Steve Peters, which I won't spoil it by trying to unravel the plot, but it's a good study into how our brain works.
It's a very, very useful book. I recommend it to people, and I love it. I love the book. I have one problem with it, which is the Audible version on audible.com, which is useful if you're a listener, but his voice is very, very dry. He's quite hard to listen to when he reads the whole book. It's quite difficult. Yeah, but a brilliant book. Great. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
Cool. And I do have a resource of the week that
I've
on the spot, Whoopi. I was going to be quick-witted and clever and say my resource is planet Earth, so get out there.
You were saying earlier on your resource was the NHS.
Yeah, but I think I mentioned it a while back, but good old Tim Ferriss, The 4-Hour Body. It's a bit of an encyclopedia, actually. It's a huge book, which is good for dipping in and out of, and he's got the diet called the slow-carb diet, which I think... from the case studies put on the website, have had a pretty amazing impact.
Yeah.
But there's little... You can just dip in and out. There's sections on sleep, on good sex life, and the importance of that as well. So the 4-Hour Body is worth a look, I would say.
He's a very clever guy, Tim Ferriss, I think. He's worth looking up on YouTube as well.
He's one of my top five. Like, I'm obsessed with anything he does. He's actually got a podcast coming shortly. He's of his own. Which will be very interesting.
We should get him on our podcast.
Well, that'd be cool. Pretty cool. I'd just be frozen. I'd be that starstruck. Okay, I think we're all done, chaps. You enjoy that? Sure.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
How did you enjoy not being the centre of attention?
No, I love not being the centre of attention. You know me, are.
Go on, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, it was lovely to have you here. It's great.
I'll just wrap things up and say we've mentioned lots of interesting things there. If you go to Live in the Present, .co.uk, you'll find all the show notes and links to things we've mentioned. Also, visit rockmountain.co.uk, which is Conrad's recently refurbished website, kind of work in progress, but
it is.
If you want to find out more about Conrad, go there, and you're going to start blogging quite a bit there too, I believe.
Yep. Yes.
With interesting bits and bobs.
A couple of interesting blogs planned.
Yeah.
One on milk,
I'd be interested in that.
Dairy milk versus, well, cow, sheep, goat milk, all compared to the various nut milks.
Okay.
And some of the things different manufacturers do with milks.
You're on Twitter and Facebook and all that too. We'll put the links up on the website for you. In the meantime, if you could share this show with a pal on Twitter and Facebook, we would be eternally grateful. And if you could leave a review on iTunes, again, we would love it, wouldn't we, Sean?
Yeah, we'll love you forever if you do that.
That's forever and ever. So I think we're all done. In the meantime, I will say once again thank you to Conrad.
Yeah, thanks, Conrad.
From Rock Mountain.
Thanks very much.
For coming in, appreciate it.
Pleasure, thank you very much.
We will see you all the time, so it's not like we're going to not see you again. We'll see you next week at the networking.
We will do.
But looking forward to it. Sean, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Edward.
And I will say goodbye. See you, everyone.
You take care. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.